Welcome back to the Data with Arta talk show. We're talking about addictions today, and we have three guests in studio. We have Jessica O, who put this together, and we have John, and we have Yagowine. If I said it wrong, correct me. And we're talking, and John was, before we went to break, was telling us his story of how things, I guess, got out of control, but you were able to maintain things, and, you know, a certain look, and then you start cutting family off, start cutting the community off. And so my question to you is, when did you decide that it was becoming a problem?
Okay, well, before the break, I was saying my life was getting unmanageable. So I want to say, you know, at this point, I was having trouble with personal relationships. I couldn't control my emotional natures. I was prey to misery and depression. I couldn't make a living. I had a feeling of uselessness. I was full of fear. I was unhappy. I couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. And that's... It took its toll on me. It took its toll. I was scared to go to the local stores. I was so skinny. I had quit my job. I'm 40 years old, living at mom's. My mom loved me. She loved me to death. So she cared for me.
Yeah.
And she let me stay at her house, and I took advantage of that.
So I guess the question now is what pushed you to go into sobriety, and what were things that you used? What kinds of tools? Because I know there's many different ways to do. Some people go to treatment. Some people do AA. Some people do. And I think Jessica pointed out earlier in the show that there's not one way that people do things. So I'm going to ask, what was your way to go through sobriety?
Well, I wanted to stop for a long time. I mean, I've tried millions of times, swearing up and down that this is my last time, listen, this is my last time. And 20 minutes later, the phone would ring, and it's someone asking for a ride to go get some crack. And I would just take off just after I finished swearing up and down, hungover, couldn't get out of bed for 2 days, and off to the races I was. I wanted to stop. Finally, I got a push, and one of my bosses said, I said, I'm ready. I need some help. And he says, okay, good, let's go to KSCS. His old friend of his was an addictions counselor, mm-hmm. and signed some papers, and off to Maniwaki for 6 weeks, treatment center I was. I learned a lot, Maniwaki, the Wanaki Center. Learned a lot about myself and soul searching. Learned about what alcohol and drugs does and a bunch of stuff. It's the first time I was sober in 20-something years. First time I had a few days of sobriety. I graduated after 6 weeks. My mom and my two sons came, and I was on a good path. They recommended I go to some 12-step programs like Alcoholics Anonymous,
yeah, yeah.
when I got out of the treatment center, when I got home, which I did not. So about 2 weeks later, I relapsed, and I relapsed hard. I started right back where I was, even harder. And I would go to AA for about 2 years, sitting in the back row, crying, watching everyone around me get sober, take a 1 month chip, 2 months chips, 3 months, taking a year cake, and here I was still crying. I thought the people didn't, there was no natives in the program.
Yeah.
I was going out of town to meetings, and I felt that they did not understand, because I grew up on the res. I thought, you know, you grew up in the city, you don't know. Today, I know that...
It doesn't matter, eh? There's no barriers?
Yes, there's no barriers. That alcohol and drugs are but a symptom. The problem is me.
Yeah.
I know that today. So,
So I guess another question is, how do you manage your sobriety now?
Well, today I go to some 12-step meetings. I belong to a couple of fellowships, and... they're 12-step fellowships, and I recovered using the 12 steps of recovery. And today I help others. We sit around a kitchen table and we look at people's causes and conditions. And I help others today. That's how... It's a big part.
Let me ask a question. Right from the beginning, you talked about when you first started, when you were younger, about feeling stronger, braver, and that. How are you feeling now?
I never thought I would be here. I didn't think I would be alive, actually. I'm not going to say I was suicidal, but at some points, I just didn't want to live anymore. I just couldn't see a way out. I didn't know how to stop. Wow, I never thought I'd be where I am today, especially talking on the radio.
A lot of people say that when they come here, this radio, it's not as bad as people think it is. I guess living this new lifestyle, what makes you proud?
Wow, I haven't lied to my mom or my sons. And I'll be taking my 3-year cake February 1st. I'll be 3 years. I haven't lied to them or hurt myself since then. I'm sorry, what was the question again?
I was just asking, like, what makes you proud now? Because, you know, you had one set of values, one set of things that you thought would make you feel better, but what makes you feel better now?
I'm accountable. I show up now. I show up for Christmas and my own birthday parties. I show up where I couldn't before.
Yeah.
I couldn't. And, you know, I'm of use to my family and my sons.
So I guess I'm going to ask this question, and we had kind of an order for questions, but I'm going to bring it up now. Why did you want to come on here to share your story of sobriety? Because I think that's important.
Well, when I was using and I wanted to stop, I didn't know anybody who had quit. I didn't know recovery was possible. I couldn't see myself living without drugs or alcohol. Today I know it's possible. Today I know it's possible. I'm living proof. And
do you ever get worried about maintaining this lifestyle now, like that it's going to be a problem, or do you have ways of that you could share that's helped you? You know, what do you have in your place?
Well, within this 12-step program, I've gone to youth correctional facilities. I've gone to Bordeaux jail, where once my son was locked up. And I share my experience, strength, and hope frequently, mm-hmm. frequently in the city of Montreal and the surrounding areas. You know, that's a big part of my sobriety, plus helping others to recover from a hopeless state of mind, body, and spirit.
Yeah, because it's a lot, eh? It's a lot of of work, eh?
It is a lot of work. I take a lot of time away from my girlfriend, my sons, my mom, but they understand that I need to do this every day. Yesterday's shower won't keep me clean today. I need to do this every day. And they understand that I help others.
And yeah, because I think one of the things I've learned from working in this field was that, you know, you need it to be able to help others. You also need it to be able to share your story as part of maintaining that sobriety, because it's not always easy. A lot of people have friends, and sometimes your friends and family members become your worst enemies because they're, you know, oh well, just do it once, it's not going to matter, or not an understanding. And I'd like to commend the community too, because I think we've come a long way. We still have work to do, but it's getting better. There's more people who are maintaining sober lives. People are choosing younger not even to get involved in it, you know, and there's a movement, and I think we have to appreciate that. Right,
it's, you know, it, like you said, there's still work to do.
Yeah,
right. But we don't see it when we're in the community, but there's a lot of positives.
Oh, yes.
And you know, I kind of like to look at statistics. So when, you know, you do Canada wide and Quebec wide, they do their census. One of the questions is always, you know, have you had alcohol in the last year? Mm-hmm. Right. So they call that the rate of abstention.
Yeah.
Right. So the 18% of Quebecers don't drink. 20% of Canadians don't drink. Hmm. 35% of First Nations people don't drink at all. You know, there's this
wow.
concept that, you know, there's so much alcoholism in First Nations
yeah.
communities, but it's not really, you know, it's not really the case. And we really need to, you know, get it out to the community and other First Nations people that it feels very isolating when you start to pursue sobriety.
Yeah.
But you're really not alone.
Yeah.
And you know what? We're going to, once the regional health survey numbers come out, we'll find out more about exactly what Ganawage's drinking habits are. And I think it's going to be something that, you know, community members are really going to have to look at these numbers and look at their own lives. And like I said, look at their relationship with substance use.
Yeah.
And really, you know, is it a good relationship for them?
And I think John pointed out something that's very common is not feeling like you're fitting in.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, I've seen that a lot. And, you know, from talking to different people who have changed their lives to being sober, people who've been chose. And I think that's a new thing, you know. Go ahead, Don.
Okay. I want to say, you know, I had friends when I had money. But when I had no money, I didn't have friends. I also wanted to say, when I took my one-year cake, I invited 10 friends who I used to drink with. Those are the guys who would eat lava for me at 3 in the morning. They would take a bullet. They would, oh, come to the house tomorrow. I will repay you back the money you spent. I invited 8 to 10 of those friends to my one-year cake. Not one of them showed up. I'll tell you who showed up. 64 members of my 12-step fellowship showed up. Those are my new friends. I made new friends.
And I think sometimes that is the hardest step in this. Has to be, is the loss of people who you thought were your friends, because that's when you find out who the real ones are.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
You know, it's very difficult, you know?
Yes, yes.
And I've heard that a zillion times from talking to different people. Thank you, and I appreciate for sharing that with us. We'll probably come back to you. I always have more questions. Our other guest, why did you want to share your story about sobriety?
Well, I think it's important to let people know that choosing sobriety can come at any point in your life. You don't have to hit the point of no return before deciding. I decided on my own to quit drinking. I didn't actually do the program, although I do have great respect for it because it seems to be helping a lot of people. But I just wanted to know that choosing sobriety is something you can do at any point, and that there are other ways to deal. There are other outlets that you can choose to participate in. Yeah, that's.
So I guess how long have you been sober?
I actually, it's been 1 year, January 13th.
Excellent.
I hit the one-year mark.
So what has the year been like in the past year?
excuse me. It's been hard. There's a lot of learning that I had to do, learning to deal with feelings and emotions and dealing with problems head on. Whereas before, I would decide to go out and have a drink and kind of try and forget about it instead of dealing with it. So that's something that I've been dealing with in the past year.
And let me ask, what was your life like before when you were and drinking, or, you know, and what kind of childhood did you have?
Well, my childhood was pretty great. I was very outgoing, rambunctious. I was kind of a smarty pants. When I reached high school, those things were a little bit frowned upon, and so I was bullied in high school, and so for me that was a big factor in choosing alcohol as a way to fit in, going to parties, and indulging in adolescent.
It's kind of like a given, like a rites of passage at some, you know, for when you're in between 12, 13, 14, you know, and it's fun, and it's like the adult thing to do, you know?
Right, yeah. So, it didn't really ever help anything. I think at the time I thought that it was helping me to fit in, but also it gave me like a sense of numbness, like where I didn't have to feel the pain of rejection and the bullying and all that. So
I just want to interrupt for a second, and we did a show like this back in November.
Yes, we did with
our guest Frank. You know, all three of our guests have had the same kind of theme of, you know, experiencing either bullying or not fitting in.
Yes.
And, one of the things we do at KSCS is we offer bullying prevention programs and we teach the kids about bullying. And, you know, it's because it's so important to teach kids to treat each other properly, you know, and it also plays into some of the other things we do, which is, you know, teaching kids how to talk about their emotions, how to name their emotions. I volunteer at drama, and a lot of times the parents think, okay, we're doing theater, right? We're teaching.
Yeah.
And they get upset because we're teaching the kids about emotions. And, you know, so now we have some kids who call it feelings camp.
Oh,
and
boy.
Sort of denigrate it that
yeah.
way. This is why it's so important to teach your kids how to name their emotions and how to talk about their emotions, because we need them to be able to deal with it in a good, healthy way, right?
Absolutely.
Your emotional health,
yeah.
Your mental health, your spiritual health, your physical health, it's all tied together.
Absolutely. Well, we worked our way to another break. We'll take a break and we'll be right back.